Welcome to the Bitches Be Brave podcast. We know how difficult and crazy it can be to juggle family, career, and not to mention make time for yourself as a busy working mom.
So it's time to get inspired and gain the tools to create a life you love. We are your hosts, Bev Steele
and Heather Hobbs.
Join us as together we motivate, inspire, and gain tools to thrive in all areas of life. Let's go.
Welcome back to this episode of Bitches Be Brave. On today's episode, we interview Laura Doyle, and this to me is such a timely and needed discussion where we talk about how to basically reignite your marriage and how to add some sparkle and some intimacy and how to kind of do a deep reflection on yourself and how we can start to improve our marriages and relationships.
Yeah, and I think we talk about the timeliness of this, but I didn't realize how much I needed it until we actually started the conversation, just because, you know, it is getting to be like a lot of togetherness, and like, I can't binge more Netflix shows with you. There's got to be more than that. And I also need to have my own time. So just kind of reevaluating, kind of where you're at and what you're thinking and how you're speaking to your spouse and what message you're, you know, how are they receiving it? All of that.
What I love about her approach too is that it's, you know, she has a focus on yourself and how to really create some fun and some self-care time for yourself to make yourself a happier person. But she also, instead of just saying, oh, you need to change how you are or how you're doing things, it's, I love that her secrets and her suggestions and her path is about just kind of rethinking how you're phrasing things. And so it's not changing. It's not having to shut your mouth necessarily. It's, I love it. It's a great take. And some, I definitely took away many, many nuggets that I know I've definitely got to start to instill in my life.
I need to instill it today before my husband gets home early from work today.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's so easy, I think, to be just, we take advantage of the people that are here and that love us. And sometimes I think that ugly side of us just comes out way too easy. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. You guys are going to love Laura. I also recommend you check out her Amazon Prime series, Empowered Wives. She is filled with amazing information that you're going to want to put to use immediately. You also are going to want to check out her Adored Wife Roadmap, and that is going to be provided on her website. So you'll find out more.
So here we go.
Hey guys, we're just taking a quick break to tell you about an amazing new wine that we just discovered. You guys know that nobody loves a glass of wine more than we do, but when we learned what is actually in the wine that we were drinking, you were shocked. No wonder we were getting headaches, brain fog, and having trouble sleeping.
That's right, Heather, but then we discovered dry farm wines. Dry farm wines are organically crafted, unprocessed wine, free of sugar, additives, and lower in alcohol. These wines are amazing, and they're better for our bodies and our planet. Now we can enjoy the pleasure and euphoria of wine without the negative effects of higher alcohol consumption.
To find out where you can try these amazing wines and get a special Bitches Be Brave discount, click on the link in our show notes below. Welcome. We are here today with Laura Doyle, who is the New York Times best-selling author of The Surrendered Wife, The Surrendered Single, and The Empowered Wife, and the star of the Amazon Prime series Empowered Wives. Her books have been translated into 19 languages and published in 30 countries. Over 15,000 women credit her with not only saving their relationships, but also showing them how to become desired, cherished, and adored for life. She's the founder of Laura Doyle Connect, an international relationship coaching company that teaches women the intimacy skills they need to have passionate, peaceful relationships. She's appeared on CBS Evening News, Dateline NBC, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and The View. She's been written about in The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and The LA Times, The Washington Post, The London Telegraph, and The New Yorker. She is a regular contributor to The Huffington Post, and she lives in Newport Beach, California, with her hilarious husband, John Doyle, who's been dressing himself since before she was born, and they have been married for 28 years. I love that, and we're going to have to find out what that is all about. But welcome.
Good for him.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you on the show today. And gosh, thinking about this topic during this time of COVID-19, where we are all kind of sequestered at home with everyone, right? Like we're here with our spouses and our kids and work kind of all plopped in together. And, you know, it's one of those things I imagine it's either going to go one way or the other. You're either going to find this time together really fantastic, or you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I want to kill you. Right. So,
yeah.
So tell us about your story and tell us how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
I'm happy to do that, but I just have to comment on that because I'm supposed to be, you know, the role model for, I think people think I have a perfect marriage, but no marriage is perfect, not even mine. And it was like a couple of weeks ago, I was like really sure that I knew the best way to mail this package without person-to-person contact, right? And I was like trying to tell my husband about this. And I mean, I was trying to also figure out how to like shape and dye my eyebrows, and I have not cultivated that skill. And I was reading the news stories about people like helping other people at great risk, and I'm like sobbing about that. And it's like the only person I'm talking to about all of this is my husband. Yeah. And it got to be just a little bit much, you know. I don't know if you can relate to that at all. It's like He's one mere more. I mean, there's nobody I'd rather be quarantined with. And he's an amazing, great guy. But then I got to commune with my people, which is the women on my campus, the wives that are committed to just having amazing relationships. And that was like, oh, like this is my medicine. I need these other women.
So soul food, yes.
Want everyone to have. So, I started out being the perfect wife until I actually got married. And then things kind of, you know, I thought that if I told my husband how to be more romantic and tidier and maybe more ambitious, like that, you know, then he would do what I wanted and then I could finally be happy. And of course that didn't work because that's not how it works. But it did make him more distant. It made him watch a lot of TV. It made him not interested in spending time with me or even making love to me. And I just remember being on the marriage counselor's gray couch when I realized like, this is hopeless. It's never going to get better. And the only real choices I felt like I had were to get divorced or just to spend the rest of my life in a loveless marriage with this man that had been diagnosed with a common mental illness. And I was diagnosed with depression. But I just was too embarrassed to get divorced. So I thought, okay, as a last ditch effort, I'm going to ask women who've been married for a long time and seem really happy. I'm going to ask them for their secrets. And I thought they were going to say, well, you have to have you have to have the right guy. You have to have a good guy first. And they didn't. They said things that didn't really make any sense to me, but I thought, okay, I'm going to just experiment with this. If it works, I'll keep it. If it doesn't, I'll throw it out. And I've been experimenting with some of their cockamamie ideas for a while. And then I walked through the door and my husband's face lit up. He was happy to see me again. And then I'd been gone. So I thought, okay, wow, this is working. And I then ended up getting some of my friends to start doing it with me because I found like, okay, now I know what to do. And it actually doesn't feel hard. It just feels new. But I couldn't keep myself doing it, right? Like, I figured out what to do from these wise women. And then like we're driving in the car and we have a big old fight again. I'm like, no, you know, this is awful. I'm back to that again. So then I ended up recruiting some of my friends to do it with me. We had this little like support group in my living room. And it was phenomenal because we were seeing miracles. Like one woman, her husband won the sales contest at work and took her on the most romantic getaway of their lives. And another woman just was like, you know what? He finally painted the family room. Like we've been arguing about that for months. So we were really seeing like it was something. And I thought, gosh, because one of the women in my support circle said, hey, can you write this down what we're doing? Because my cousin in Florida needs to know because her marriage is unhappy too. And so I did write it down. And then that ended up becoming my first book, so I just kind of fell over, accidentally started this movement because that book went on the New York Times bestsellers list. It was number one on Amazon. It's published in 19 languages in 30 countries. And now there's a whole international movement of women who practice these six intimacy skills. We use the connection framework because we think having a great relationship is not just like, okay, yeah, that would be nice. We think it's really important that, you know, great countries rely on strong communities, and those strong communities rely on strong families, and those strong families are because of a great relationship. You know, that's how everybody thrives. So the women that make that a priority, we kind of congregate on my campus and talk about the specific actionable things that I learned, that anyone can learn, that over 15,000 women have now used to make their marriages magical again.
Okay, well, you're going to have to take us through it, because I'm hanging on your every word. So, so Laura, just like, tell us a little bit about some of the feedback that you had received and how you implemented that into your life. Just kind of take us through the steps.
Well, so my parents are divorced also. So I was kind of doing what I had seen modeled for me. And that was a failed recipe, right? Didn't work for them. It wasn't working for me. And I remember one of the things one woman said to me that was, well, I try never to criticize my husband, no matter how much it seems like he deserves it. And I was like, got anything else? Yeah, because I don't think, first of all, I didn't think I could do it. Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one, right? So what ended up happening, so one of the things I did was I went through and I tried to make everything very specific to where I knew if I was doing it or not, right? Because sometimes you hear advice, marriage advice, like, oh, you have to love yourself more or whatever. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, you have to hug yourself or, you know, what? I don't understand. So one of the things I did was, so for that, I came up with this this cheat phrase that I decided I was going to use. So, and mentally I was going to put on duct tape, right? I was just going to wrap this duct tape around my mouth when I had the urge to criticize my husband. And that has saved me to this day. I still sometimes think about that. Like, okay, I'm wearing my duct tape right now, you know, cause I'll see him doing something and he's doing it like, you know, he's driving in the stupid lane or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. He's just not doing it the way I would do it. So instead of criticizing it, I will put the duct tape on. And then I had also developed some really unhealthy habits where, you know, he'd ask my opinion if he was getting dressed or if he was getting a new phone or whatever, because he didn't want to hear my wrath later. And, you know, yeah, if he was starting a business or whatever. And so I started using this cheat phrase, and the phrase is, whatever you think. Whatever you think. And I know it's a tough one because it sort of seems like you're going to be agreeing with all these things that you don't necessarily agree with. But what I did was I used that as a way to remind me, like, hey, that's on his side of the street. That's on his paper. We talk about, you know, my paper, your paper, and I'm only responsible for my paper. And so if it was, yeah, if it's what he's wearing, if it's, you know, what cell phone he wants to buy, right? Now there's areas where papers overlap, right? You know, you have bills together and a house together and kids together. Those areas overlap. So it gets a little trickier then, but you know, I mean, I find my husband is actually a pretty capable guy. And when I just trust him, expect the best outcome, people very often rise to your expectations. And that's exactly what I experienced. It was just my own fear keeping me from wanting to say whatever you think, like whatever you think, I trust you. In fact, Kathy Murray has a great story about this. She's a coach with me now. And the very first time she read my first book, The Surrendered Wife, she was astonished that she realized, like, oh my gosh, I have something to do with the breakdown of my marriage, because she could see where she'd been controlling. So her husband came in and said, hey, I need you to tell me what to do with the cell phone plan. And she said the magic words. She said, whatever you think. And he looked at her funny, like, no, come on. Like, you got to tell me. You always tell me. She was a CFO of a $40 million private school and stuff. So she said, just stuck to her guns. She said, whatever you think. And she added, I trust you. And she was afraid he was going to screw it up, but he did fine, right? He went off and did the cell phone plan. Now, they'd been sleeping in separate beds for 6 months. So it'd been a sexless marriage. She was right on the verge of breaking up her second marriage. It was a blended family. And, but instead that night he came to her and he said, you were so nice today. And she just had tears streaming down her cheeks, and they slept in the same bed together that very night. So, and she still gets tears in her eyes when she talks about how tragic it would have been if she'd thrown out this guy that she's now so madly in love with, but just didn't know how to trust.
You know, it's, that's a huge one, because my personality type, I'm a firstborn. I'm a very independent, very driven, very controlling type of personality. And I think, you know, and my husband is not, he's much more, I mean, I'm kind of the Sagittarius, he's a Scorpio. He's much more passive, and he lets me, for so many things, kind of get away or take the lead in a lot of things. But when he says no, he's like, I call him the hammer. Like it's a hard no. And you know, when I think about kind of marriage, I also was raised in a very Christian family who believes like the man is the head of the household and you're subservient to the man. And I was like, yeah, I don't buy that. And like, I don't want that in my wedding vows. And, you know, so I think it's like, when I hear that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would die if it was like a big discussion, like, hey, where do you want to go on vacation? I trust you. Cause he'd be like, let's just not and save the money and just stay here in our backyard.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I find that one so hard, but it's interesting. I guess, you know, you really have to sit there and put some trust in that, right?
Well, you do, but then you just brought up, this is a really great point you just brought up, Heather, because there's this other piece that's incumbent on us to bring as women. We're the ones with the emotional brilliance in our marriages, right? They did this study at the University of Toronto, and they found out that, and I'm glad you guys are both sitting down for this, they found out that women are more emotional than men. All right. So that is research money well spent, right? So that's good. So now that we know that, for me, this is a big part of what makes marriages really vibrant. That part where you just have butterflies in your stomach, you just feel that connection, you're having the deep conversations. It's because we bring our emotional brilliance and our vulnerability and our desires. So one of the things that we teach on our campus is how to express your desires in a way that inspires. And I always say desire is the key of feminine power. And a lot of us are not comfortable. I wasn't comfortable expressing my desires. I think Catherine Aird said that if you can't be a good example, you just have to be a horrible warning. And this story kind of falls into that category. It was when we were dating, my husband took me to Hawaii, and I was so excited on the first day. I thought, we are going to go to the beach and we're going to have the best time at the beach. But instead of saying what I wanted, I said, what do you want to do? And he said, well, I was thinking, what, let's go see a volcano. And I was like, a volcano, huh? But if he was my new boyfriend, I didn't want any conflict, right? So I thought, I'm just going to suck it up and go see a volcano. And so we're driving in the rental car, and you don't see a volcano for a long time. It's just little molten rocks or whatever. And I started to get irritated because I was like, I wanted to go to the beach. He didn't even ask. And so then he sees something's wrong, and he goes, what's the matter? And I said, did you think this was funny? Because I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's really stupid. You know, I want to go to the beach, and I'm just driving around this rental car. You know? So he saw a volcano, all right.
An eruption, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All he knew is he took his girlfriend to Hawaii, right? And you do know, after that, he still took me to the beach after I behaved so badly because he just wanted me to be happy. And this is what we see. I've asked thousands of men how important it is that their wife or girlfriend is happy. And they all say the same thing. This is what they say. They say, oh, it's everything. It's the most important thing. Or in the UK, they say it's imperative. So if we are able to just express our desires, I call it cleanly and clearly, right? So for example, I used to just complain. I didn't know how to do this. I feel so sad for my younger version of myself. I had no concept of saying what she wanted, because if you can't say what you want, you're never going to get what you want. But so I used to say, John, my husband, John, you know, this kitchen's a disaster area. And I thought he was just going to jump up and start cleaning the kitchen and off the couch, right? And that never happened. And all he could hear probably was, you know, John, blah, blah, blah. I don't think men can even hear us when we're complaining. So finally, I learned about expressing my desires. And I said, you know, I would love a clean kitchen. And he goes, okay, I'll clean it. I'll do the dishes. I was like, And that was, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. He's been doing it ever since. He's been doing it this whole time. He knows it makes me happy. So I was like, who knew that just by expressing your desires, you could get that kind of outcome? So for me, the vacation thing is like, it really would be incumbent on me to say, like, where do I want to go? I want to ski in the mountains, or I want to lay on the beach, or I want to just get a, you know, do a quick getaway, or do I want to get on a plane and see a new country? And then I would be saying, you know, I would love to go skiing, for example. And, you know, what do you think? What do you think? So it's we still get to always express our desires, but it's even better if you do it in a way that inspires.
I think that we as women, you know, we tend to take on a lot. So maybe we don't want to be sweating the small stuff or can be considered a nag, right? And so once it gets to that point where you're like, he's laying on the couch and you're walking into a dirty kitchen again, that's when the volcano goes. So how do you help women with that, where they balance not wanting to be a nag or a drag and always, but also not stuffing it until it becomes really critical?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we don't do any stuffing around here for sure, because it does. I mean, it sounds like I'm not the only person that's ever been a human volcano.
It's like you were looking into my life.
Okay, all right. So the very first thing that we do when you arrive on our campus, the very first skill that we dig into is making yourself ridiculously happy. And the magic of this is that a lot of us, you know, when our husbands fell in love with us, when we fell in love with him, we were like the goddess of fun and light. We were just like, hey, having a good time, feeling good, doing things we love, hanging with our friends that we love, you know, getting enough of that, right? Not explaining the very best way to mail something without person-to-person contact, right? Like I was doing that time. So when you are filling yourself up, and the way we measure this is that you have, you know, you don't have to, but the suggestion is to do at least three things a day for frivolous fun. So there might be some remedial self-care that you need. So maybe you need to get some sleep. That's always a big one, right? Especially for mothers of young children, I find that's like way up there. And then, but then this is on top of that. We're talking frivolous. Doesn't do anybody any good except that it makes you feel joy. And why is that so important? Because if, you know, if mama's not happy, first of all, we all know the rest of that sentence, right? And then, and if I'm trying to do some of the skills that are going to create a happy marriage, well, only happy people have happy relationships. And if I've got, if I'm depleted, if I've got nothing to give, I'm not going to be my best self. And I need to be my best self because, first of all, I don't like being around that other version of me, the volcano version of me. She wasn't that fun to hang around, even for me. And so so this is the first thing that we start with. And it's kind of adorable that a lot of women will arrive at our campus on in a crisis, kind of like I was, right? On the verge of divorce, or maybe there's an affair going on. Maybe there's already a separation. The divorce is already filed. Super, super urgent situation. And we're like, okay, let's start with, you know, some self-care, some what makes you really happy. And first of all, she doesn't know. Because it's been so long, right? She hasn't really thought about that. She has, I'll say, ask her to make a list of 20, and she's like, she's like, what is it? And then the second piece is she's trying to skip that step so she can get to the stuff that's really going to fix her marriage right now. And we're always like, okay, back here. You can't do any of the rest of the steps until you've got that piece on board.
I also think, because I know years ago when I was going through a really rough time in my own marriage, I was seeing a therapist, and when she would talk about trying to make the marriage better, I was like, I don't even think I want it to. Like, you know, you get to a point where you're like, I've been through this up and down, like, I don't want that. So she said, okay, let's focus on making you happy. And I was like, okay, I guess I can get down with that, you know, and we started to put a plan into place where I was focusing on things that brought me joy. And I made a goal to do one thing. And for me, it was a month, but that was super fun, you know, something really fun and kind of splurging, making time for exercise, making time for meditation, making time for things. And sure enough, I went back to her and I was like, my marriage is doing a lot better. And it's because, I mean, I think it's so true. Like when you ask yourself, would you want to be married to you? If you're walking around kind of snarky and miserable and angry all the time, that's not a fun person to walk in the door to. And a happier you is just probably just a happier. I love how you said that. Happy people have happy marriages.
Yeah. Ones that can have it. You can't be miserable and then like expect your marriage to somehow be great, right? Yeah. It just doesn't work that way.
So I like that you start with that. So is that the one? And what follows that?
Well, so then, so Well, actually, I'm going to jump around a little bit because we talked a little bit about so relinquishing painful control is kind of the whatever you think. That's one of the cheat phrases. So we have, I don't know, I probably have like 25 or 30 little cheat phrases that we rely on to kind of put yourself in the right headspace that to first of all, become your best self, to be your best self, and also maintain your dignity. Because one of the things that happens when you volcano, right, is you have a little bit of an emotional hangover from it, right? You don't mm-hmm. feel good about it. So you want to be able to be respectful, which is one of the other skills. And for this one, this was something I learned from these incredible women that I got these tips from, but it just didn't make any sense to me. And even now I'll write about it and I'm like, that is so weird that this is what men consider respectful. So I think to a woman, we say like, we know, like everyone's already been told, right? Oh, like men want respect and women want love and you got to be respectful if you mm-hmm. want a good marriage and blah, 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 right? So I'm like, that's nice. I am respectful except for the way he dresses and the way he drives and how he's such a slob, right? Like we just don't even see. We have such blind spots. But so the part that, I mean, I just thought I would die before I'd ever do this because I'm a well-educated feminist, you guys, and I just did not think this was part of a modern marriage where that was a 50-50 marriage, but it's apologizing for being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Apologize. And that's the wording I use. I'll say, and that's what happened when I was very insistent about the how to mail something situation just a couple weeks ago, right? I had to apologize for being disrespectful when I was telling him what to do, when I was telling him what to do and how to do it. Like he's not a grown man who's very capable already, right? That's a great example of disrespect to a man. I used to think at least, oh, I'm being respectful because I didn't leave a mess and I told him where I was and I heated up his dinner when he came home or whatever. That's like, no, that has nothing to do with it. For them, it's respectful when you are honoring his thinking. So we have a bunch of cheap phrases around that. Like one of them is, I hear you. I hear you. So it's just listening. And a great story. I heard a great story recently from one of my coach trainees who was she felt like her husband was so stingy. Like he's just so cheap. Wouldn't let her buy anything. And she was buying these disposable tablecloths, which she loved. She's got a bunch of kids and it just really helped her life. You have these disposable tablecloths at the end. And so she was, he was saying, why did you buy these? These are a waste of money. And she said, oh, I knew if you knew how happy they made me, you'd want me to have them, right? So she's just kind of another part of the teaching. And he was like, no, I don't think you should get them. I think they're a waste. And she was like baffled, like why? I know he wants me to be happy, but this part's not working. And so we talked about it a little bit, how maybe some respect might be missing. So she went back and just said, hey, I want to apologize for being disrespectful. When I bought the tablecloths, I knew you didn't think it was a good investment of money, good way to spend money. And so she said, I just wanted to apologize about that. And he went on a little tirade. He was like, yeah, because you know, you figure you spend this much and it's every day. And that means you're spending this much a month and it's just a total waste. And she's like, got the duct tape on thinking, I want to interject. I want to argue. I want to complain right now. But she's like, I'm just going to listen. So she just said, I hear you. I hear you. She just gave him the floor. And by the end of the conversation, he said, you know what? I'm going to see if I can find a deal on those tablecloths. And he went to the store and bought her 8 boxes. Oh. He just wanted to be heard. He just needed to be heard. And that's part of respect.
That's good.
Yeah. So there's a lot of magic in that.
Yeah, that is really good. So you are, as you were talking and we're talking about the current situation with couples being home and we're hearing of maybe divorce is increasing. I found myself alone yesterday for the first time because I've got college age kids that are home. I have a daughter in high school and my husband. And I was like, wow, you know, you think about self-care and alone time and that thing, but you don't really realize how very important that time is unless it's not there. So how would you, with, you know, everyone sheltered at home with their families, how would you help women today to carve out that time to be able to, when it might not be physically possible?
That is a fantastic question. And I actually was just speaking to one of my coaches who does have two young children, Coach Bonnie. And I was asking her about this, and she said this was probably the biggest life-changing thing that she learned on our campus and that she's implemented and really upheld. And she's so grateful for. And that is that she set up her family life after just very nearly, she had filed for divorce actually from her husband prior to this. She set up her family life now to where everybody in the family knows that mama gets a 2-hour break from everybody every day. 2 hours every day. She's got toddlers, but they, even the kids know, don't ask mama for a drink. Don't ask mama for a snack. If you want to have a happy mama, if you want to have a mama who's going to play with you and smile when she sees you and give you, you know, gives you hugs and doesn't snap at you or whatever, this is what we have to do. And so the husband's on board, the kids are on board. She takes that 2 hours and sometimes she naps, but she says she just sometimes take a bath. She'll just journal. She will just play on her phone for 2 hours a day. So it sounds like a miracle, right? I think a lot of women hear that and they go, that's nice for her, but it would never work for me. But it really is a matter of her prioritizing that happy mama so that she can have the kind of happy family and be the kind of wife. And everyone agrees with it now. The whole family sees the value of it because she made it her priority.
Yeah, that's so important. I know that when I started having a family, I would get up earlier just so I could have that quiet time in the morning. But then again, here it is, like, I'm getting up earlier. That's instead of fitting it into the entire environment of our family, you know, instead I'm like getting up super early and then I'm tired at night, probably the volcano's going off again.
Yeah. You
know? Had I just negotiated those couple hours during the day, we all would have been better off, I think.
I mean, I think we can all think about like our own mothers on her worst day, right? And now I think about it, I'm like, okay, I get what was going on that day. Yeah. when she was becoming a volcano, right? She'd probably overgiven.
Well, and speaking of that time and being tired, and you know, I want to make sure we cover all this. I want to hear about all 6 of your intimacy skills,
sure,
but
of course.
You know, I guess on the lines of intimacy, right? Like that's another hard one if you're just exhausted. And we're right now during this time where, you know, we have teenagers, but I have one son who's on the spectrum and he has no boundaries and he is impulsive. And so there is like, there's just never a time where you feel safe with a locked door to indulge. And so how do you help couples through that? And is that one of your 6 skills that you kind of touch on at some point?
Right. So, and quarantine definitely puts an extra layer, right, of stress on that. Cause you could have maybe like left the house and gone to a coffee shop or something. Right. So I get that there's, an extra. So one of the things that, one of my favorite aspects of the 6 intimacy skills is, and this falls into the gratitude skill. So we're kind of touching on a little bit about each skill. We're not going, I mean, we're just, you know, kind of skimming
perfect,
the surface,
unfortunately.
And obviously it takes longer than this to learn them all. But I just really want to touch on this one because it's been so powerful for me and for so many people. And it's, I call it the spouse fulfilling prophecy. And so I learned about this from Lee Miltier, actually, who used to teach a course on auto-suggestion years ago. So this woman went to her course on, you know, where you'd say to yourself, I ran a marathon or I have a successful business, right? You'd say the things that you want to be your reality. And this woman left Lee Miltier's course and said to herself, you know, I've been auto-suggesting some things that I didn't want to my husband. And the thing she was auto-suggesting to him was, you always lose your temper. That is just like you always blow up. You always get mad. He was a volcano apparently. And so she left that thinking, I'm going to start just affirming the opposite. Just, well, I mean, what could it hurt? I mean, I'm just going to experiment with it. We'll see how it goes. So she goes home, waits for him to lose his temper. She doesn't have to wait very long. And as soon as he does, she says to him, that's not like you to lose your temper. And he looks at her funny. And their 12-year-old son said, yes, it is, mom. He always loses his temper because who had he been listening to, right? He'd heard that. So, but she sticks to her guns. She keeps just, it's not like you to lose your temper. And then not long after that, they're at a restaurant. The service is really slow. And he starts to fume. He's like, I have a good mind to call the manager over here and let him know how long we've been waiting. And then he stops and he looks at her and goes, that's not like me to lose my temper, is it? She just nearly fell out of the booth onto the floor because here he was mirroring back to her what she was saying to him. And so And I decided to use this myself because I used to have this really awful habit of saying to my husband, why don't you see if you can get a raise? Why don't you ask your boss for a raise? Why don't you see if you can get a better job? Why don't you try to make more money? Mm-hmm. And the subtext to that, of course, is you don't make enough money. And so we got to the point where he wasn't making any money because that's just how good I am at manifesting. Not just me, but like everyone, all of us. Yeah. And so, and I thought about this story. I thought, well, I'm going to start a new spouse fulfilling prophecy for my husband. And I decided to start saying to him, you've always been a good provider, which felt true. And then I also said, just for fun, I started calling him Mr. Moneybags. And so around that time, he'd always worked for other people. And around that time he started his business, his legal video business, which was very successful. And he was more successful with that than he had been at any of the other jobs. And it was really fun. It started to feel really natural to just call him Mr. Moneybags. He'd get these big checks in the mail or whatever. I'm like, Mr. Moneybags, you know? So I got a totally different outcome from changing my focus. I call that, you know, just focusing on your faith instead of your fear. I started finding evidence for the things that I was saying. It wasn't just lying. I was focusing on the experience I wanted to have instead of the experience I didn't want to have. And so women use this even on their kids. And so one woman was just telling me about this recently. She had an impatient, super impatient middle child. She said like the younger one had more patience, right? Than this, I think it was like a 4-year-old or something. So she decided to just start affirming that this little girl was so patient. And she was saying this to her like, oh yeah, I see you're being really patient. Thank you. You're always so patient. She said it a couple times. And then she was trying to hand something out for dinner. And she said, I'll be right there. You know, I'll get yours in just a minute. And she says, Mommy, you can wait. Remember, I'm really patient. So when you talk about your son, maybe not having the best boundaries or whatever, and even the locked door. And I don't know. I'm wondering.
I'm going to try that.
Another experience you want to have. Yeah.
That's a great suggestion. I like that. That's a really good one. Because it is. It's so easy to point out the negative in people and just to try to reverse that. That's a good one. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. I always say complaints are like lazy desires, right? There's really something you want. You just got to flip that complaint over and figure out what it is. The complaint can lead you there, but it's not going to get you what you want.
You have to have some patience though, when you're doing that, to allow for them to have the time to make the changes, I would assume.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've found about all of these skills. I mean, the joke was on me because I thought my husband's the one that needs to change, right? He's the problem in the marriage. And even I had found marriage counselors to validate that that was true. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that all of these practices changed me. They changed my heart. They changed what I was looking for. Like if you are looking for red cars, you don't see the blue cars go by because that's not what you were looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, a lot of it is pretty, I'm not a super patient person myself. Someone probably needs to come up with a spouse fulfilling prophecy for me to be patient. Mm-hmm. But it was one of the things that I thought was really exciting about learning the intimacy skills and practicing them is how a lot of times you get pretty immediate results. A lot of women say, I felt like I had a new husband in about 2 weeks. Mm. Pretty quick. Especially when you've got years of breakdown, years of like, she's feeling like they're about to get divorced. I remember one couple, Melissa in Florida, had been in a cold war for 10 years, like no speaking, separate bedrooms, and just like awkward roommates passing in the hallway. And she was able to not only just, you know, fix her relationship, but she made it so physically passionate that her teenage kids started really complaining like, Mom, Dad, oh my God, you're disgusted. Why do you always have to be touching each other and kissing? And isn't that the kind of marriage we all really want to have, is where you're gross and not your kids?
Yeah, it is. Because I mean, honestly, it's I always think about that. You know, we are modeling what our kids are going to seek, right? Whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, I think they seek kind of what they see and what they know. And you think about that, like, what if your child came to you and described that they were in the same marriage that you were feeling? And, you know, and so what better gift can you give to your kids than to do that, right? To have a strong, loving relationship that you model, because that's what they then will know what it's supposed to be.
Yes, so that's absolutely huge. And I think a lot of us too are so busy trying to, I know I was trying to make everything look okay on the outside, right? We'd be on our way to a party. We'd be having a big old, you know, knockdown, drag out fight in the car. And we'd get there and we'd be like, oh, hi, you know, like everything's great. So I think we spend a lot of time trying to keep up that appearance. And so, yeah, I think one of the things that's been gratifying for so many of the students on our campus is just arriving and finding out like there are other women whose husbands don't want to have sex with them anymore, or there are other women that are separated in their own homes, or where there's affairs going on, things like that. Just knowing you're not the only one.
You know, as I sit here listening to you about the spouse fulfilling prophecy, I can't help but think of Mother's Day yet again this year. I always am so disappointed. And I think it's because I spend a lot of time making sure everybody's birthdays and every event is that. And so I think for some reason that that is going to come back to me. And it really never does. Yeah. So is that a situation where you would say, hey, you should be telling your spouse, you give the best gifts or you do the best whatever. I mean, hell, I know this is a common with my girlfriends. I had a group of friends at one point, we were just going out on Mother's Day in the morning and having a brunch together because we are consistently disappointed. So help me there.
Oh my gosh. So painful to be the one who is always arranging those birthday parties and getting those decorations and making it special and the outfits and the gifts, and then it's your day and nothing, right? Yeah, super, super disappointing. And this just reminds me of one of my students and her sweater. Actually, it started with the purse. So she got a, I think it was for Christmas. Her husband, new husband, got her a really beautiful, sleek clutch, right? Kind of smallish clutch. And it was gorgeous, but she knew like, hey, this is not something I'm going to use. So she told him, oh, it's really beautiful. I love it. And she took it back because not practical. Right. And so, so later on, we talked about the skill of receiving. So it's another one of the skills, the receiving graciously, which it sounds so old fashioned, right? But, receptivity is actually the essence of the feminine. So we're never more feminine than when we're receptive. So she learned about this idea that maybe you would just receive his gifts graciously. And we'll talk a little bit about how to do that because you don't want stupid stuff, right? That to be coming in. So anyway, so she said to her husband, you know, I really regret that I took that purse back because it was really beautiful. And he goes, oh, thank God. And she goes, what? And he goes, well, I was thinking, how am I going to ever buy her anything? Because she said she loved it, but then she took it back. I didn't know I was ever going to make you happy. And she got it. So the next birthday, Christmas, whatever it was, Mother's Day, whatever, he got her a sweater. And it just was not her style sweater. It wasn't. So she decided like, okay, I learned my lesson this time. I'm not going to take this one back. So she got the sweater and she wore it a couple times and she got a lot of compliments and it became her favorite sweater. So she realized like, okay, that kind of expanded my horizons in a way that I didn't anticipate. And isn't that what gift giving kind of is, right? I mean, if you want the perfect gift, you go to the mall or you go to Amazon, right? And then you buy it for yourself. But gifts are a little bit different. And so the idea is that, so one of the things I try to do now in my marriage is, so I get gifts that aren't always fantastic. They aren't exactly what I imagine, but it's like, you know, with a friend, you would say like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. This is so thoughtful. Thank you for finding the thing that, you know, was perfect for me or whatever. You can be authentic. You don't have to be inauthentic. Like you don't have to say, oh, I love it. Or this is my favorite color. If that's not true, but you can kind of look past that into the thoughtfulness and the love that went past into it. And when you do that, what we find is people start to receive things more. So I had one student who her husband gotten her before they were married, like over 20 years ago, like some Valentine's heart-shaped soap or something and some washcloths and a little basket for Valentine's. And she wasn't crazy about it. And she let him know. And he never bought her another gift for 20 years until she came to our campus and learned about receiving. And for Christmas, he also got her a sweater, designer sweater, really beautiful sweater. She goes, I think he knows I like it. I've worn it 3 out of the 5 days I've had it. You know, I think I'm going to wear this sweater out. And it was the beginning, like he started taking her on trips and doing other things. So the one thing that we can all look at is like, how are we receiving things? Are we letting people know that we're pleasable? Or are we sending out this like, don't waste money on flowers, they only die? Yeah. Right?
I literally say those words. I do, because I do hate flowers. It's so funny.
Love them.
But that's, gosh, that really did hit home for me, because I think that you're right. I'm a terrible receiver of gifts from family. And the other thing I think is we need to stop the comparison, right? Stop looking at Facebook. Because I had a friend whose birthday was right around Mother's Day. And she put on Facebook like this glorious, like they had done this road trip and she made it look so fun. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you got to have a good birthday while, you know, in quarantine. She's like, it was awful. We got in a huge fight and da, da, da. And she's like, I just tried to make it look good. And I was like, you did. And you made everyone feel really bad that like our birthdays aren't that fun. And so I think that happens so often. You know, you put your best like self out there that isn't even necessarily true. So I think sometimes that comparative piece.
There's no question, right? Yeah. But I also think it's kind of fun. Like whenever I see something online and I'm like, ooh, I feel that little jolt of like envy. It's like, okay, that can be a clue. That was something, that must be something I want. That must be, mm-hmm. So there's like a clue to my desires. And sometimes it can kind of help me unearth it and be able to say, you know what, for my birthday, I want to go on a camping trip. I would love to go to Joshua Tree or whatever is true. And that's the other side of it too, right? It's like, what's the harm in saying, you know, for Mother's Day, I would just love to have brunch served to me and not lift a finger all day and also get a massage or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever's true for you. Just expressing those desires.
For at least my husband, I think that he views these things like Valentine's Day isn't important to him. Mm-hmm. For Father's Day, he really just wants to sleep in, go for a bike ride and have a great meal. You know, maybe go to the zoo. He loves the zoo on Father's Day, but that to me is not what I want. So yeah, I think just having the courage to, in a positive way, be able to voice that.
That I love that you call that courage, and that's why the name of your show I love so much, right? Because that it is exactly that. It's a courage issue. I think a lot of times, like I have a thing going right now, even where I really want a pool. I've wanted a pool in my backyard for years and years, and so we were starting to make plans to have a pool, and then all of a sudden, whoa, coronavirus! You know, like mm-hmm. and everything's terrible or whatever. And I immediately was like, oh yeah, you know, pool. Like I don't really need a pool, and it's like. No, I would love to have a pool. That's the truth. Now, it doesn't mean that I become entitled or demanding about it, but I get to just honor that desire. And it's not a complaint, right? It's not like, we don't even have a pool, or what, right? But it comes mm-hmm. just me saying, you know, gosh, I really would love to have a pool. It's not unattractive. That's not unappealing. In fact, can be kind of inspiring for people around you when they know what would make you happy. Like one friend got me some pool toys.
I'm picturing a big swan.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, Laura, I feel like I could talk to you all day. There's so many good nuggets here. Where can you tell our listeners where they can find you and your, you know, your show and your books and all the great things?
You know what? So one thing I'm really excited for everyone to get their hands on is the Adored Wife Roadmap. And it's mm-hmm. absolutely free. And it also talks about some of the common mistakes that women make. We're kind of all making. Everyone's making these same mistakes. I was, everyone. When you're trying to get your husband's attention or his affection or his time. And so you can get that at lauradoyle.org. You just go right to lauradoyle.org. And get that free roadmap, and that'll set you on your way. It just kind of lays out all the steps, and you can see the little trophy prize at the end of the shiny, amazing, you know, marriage where you feel desired and taken care of and special.
I'm going there today. I'll tell you, my husband told me he was coming home at 12:00 today early, and I immediately said, "Why?" I could just see the disappointment in his face. So I'm going there right after.
Yeah. I love your honesty.
Right after this episode.
It's so adorable. We've all done that.
It's true. I think when we talk about it too, it's like we really do like, it doesn't feel like we're being that mean and nasty in our normal life, but when we really do talk about it and put it in this perspective, I think it does. It really highlights sometimes, I think, how we treat the people we love the most, the worst.
Right? Yeah, they get the real us, right? Yes. And that's why it is so much like, I feel like it was the best self-improvement program I could have ever undertaken, was just trying to fix my broken marriage. So I wouldn't trade nothing for my journey now, as Maya Angelou would say.
That's awesome. And Laura, a question that we always ask our guests, what does it mean to you to be brave?
Well, one of my favorite quotes is from Ambrose Redmoon, who said that courage is not the absence of fear. It's the decision that something else is more important. And that's part of why I'm on a mission to end world divorce. It's been really scary at times to... like when I first wrote my book and I got to go on national TV shows like the Today Show and Good Morning America and Dateline, I was scared every step of the way, but I decided it was more important that women get the message that there are skills that they can learn that can make their marriage playful and passionate again.
Yep. And it will help our families and our children and our culture.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
Yep.
Right. Don't you just want a happy marriage for everybody you know and love?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your amazing knowledge and experience. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
It was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Laura. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I'd like to ask you, if you did, if you could please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and a 5-star rating, I hope. I really would like to get this podcast out to more women, supporting women, and I can't do it without your help. Thanks so much, and be brave.